Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I come to work with two hands every day and I'm trying to bless somebody.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny. And there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
Good morning. It's Monday, October 10th. Welcome to the podcast sponsored by absolutely nobody. That means we have an opening, though. I mean, can somebody get Chubbies on the horn here? What are we doing? Let's get some Chubbies pop on this show. Scott is here. Scott Pienowski, as he is every single Sunday night to recap all of the action. Scott, what is the proper length of a man's set of shorts? There is a right answer to this.
I wish I knew that. All I know is this. You know, when you get older, all the stuff that you didn't want to do as a kid, you want to do now. Like, you didn't want to take naps. You want to take naps. I didn't want to eat my broccoli. I love broccoli now. When I was a kid, I wanted to wear shorts all the time. Now, as an adult, I actually prefer to wear long pants.
Oh, man, I'm going the opposite, I guess, as I'm getting older, that I never.
You are Peter Pan. You are living the Peter Pan life for sure.
Yeah, I think that might be the truth of it. But then again, maybe I'll hit like a curve at some point and come back down. Who knows? But anyways, yeah. Welcome to the show. Week 5. It was a wild one. We got a lot of stuff to get into. So let's just jump right into it, not waste any time. Scott, I love how at this point now in the recaps and honestly in the previews too, it's like, man, we got to get to the Seahawks right away. And we sure do have to get to the Seahawks and the Saints right away. First game up, New Orleans 39, Seattle 32. Scotty, what do you got on this game, man?
Yeah, this game came in hot, stayed hot. You know, the Lions didn't do their carnival act, but Seattle sure did. And look at the Saints. We have to, as a fantasy industry and as fantasy players, change this way we look at Taysom Hill. He's a blow-up game, 3-run rushing touchdowns, throws for a touchdown. I don't care about snap shares with Taysom Hill. I don't care how often he's on the field. He's like a hockey player who only plays in the power play. He's like a baseball player who only hits in Coors Field with people on base. When he's on the field, he's probably touching the ball, or there's a very high chance of it, and he's the best goal line back on the team. You know, Alvin Kamara is still a useful player, but when they need to plow in from in close, Taysom Hill's the best option they have. So I don't want to hear anything about snaps with this guy. Just like last year when Cordarrelle Patterson was a low snap guy, but when he was on the field, they were using him like crazy. It's like, well, steer into that. And by the way, another multiple position eligibility guy. I think I only have one Taysom Hill share, and I could have played him over a myriad of players who I didn't play him over, and it may cost me the game. But I think the Saints have seen the light, and they can't turn back now. Seattle is what, you know, we want from fantasy teams. They have a quarterback in Geno Smith who's at least competent, maybe competent plus. He's having a great season. He presses the ball to the people we want, Metcalf and Lockett. Backfield's been good. I hate to see Penny get hurt, but Kenneth Walker broke off a long touchdown run late in that game. So I think Seattle is, I mean, last week I threw all the roses at the Lions for being the best carnival in the NFL, most points allowed. But Seattle's like right there. They can score. And they have confidence. They have swagger on offense, and they can't stop anybody. It's not like the Saints have a great offense. We all love Olave, and I did say a lot of nice things about Taysom Hill, but, I mean, it's not like this is the Drew Brees, Sean Payton Saints. So let's just keep rocking and rolling with those Seattle games because there's a lot more fantasy production to come.
Scott, I, like you, have one Taysom Hill team, and it's a Superflex Dynasty league where he has tight end eligibility now, obviously, mm-hmm. because that's
like he doesn't
he plays. Yep. And I really don't want to open up like the position eligibility debates and the wars and all that stuff, but I did start him at my tight end spot this week, Scott, in this dynasty league because Kyle Pitts was injured. And I mean, Kyle, you put up more points than I could probably hope for Kyle Pitts to score in any game ever in human history, Taysom Hill. And that was very rude
of you. You're supposed to play another player to score 0 points to match Kyle Pitts. That's what people have been doing all over the fantasy. You know, all over the interwebs, right? People are showing the rotten tight end that they played this week and how he basically did what Kyle Pitts did. Nothing.
And I mean, look, I'll be honest. Like I said, I don't want to open up the position eligibility thing, but I looked at the lineup afterwards and I was like, that feels a little dirty. Like that feels like something I shouldn't have been able to get away with. But obviously, he doesn't do those touchdowns. Like he could have a 3.8 day instead of, I'm pretty sure it's like 37 points in this league, which is just absolutely absurd. I think I have like 247 points total. It's just absolutely out of control, the whole Taysom Hill thing. So
I have to confess this. I have to confess my Taysom Hill team. I'm looking at it now and I'm very depressed by this. I could have played him over Chase Edmonds. I don't know how I missed that. The thing is, I have Dallas Goedert, so I was never going to play Taysom Hill over him. I love Dallas Goedert. We know Arizona can't stop the tight end. We'll get to that game later. But I could have benched Chase Edmonds, which would have been perfectly plausible. I could have benched Antonio Gibson. I could have benched Alan Lazard, who did fine. But you know, I mean, the play was benching Chase Edmonds, and we'll talk about that later.
Sure. I just to put a bow on the Taysom Hill thing, I do think because he has eligibility at like a tight end, at flex, whatever, and if you're playing in these formats where you're throwing out some kind of like fringe names, right? At best, like Lazard is a fringe startable name. Chase Edmonds has fallen below that. We know that at this point, but like Antonio Gibson, fringe startable name. I do wonder, and this is where it's going to get hairy because of the eligibility stuff. Like, I do wonder that as long as Jameis is out, and maybe even when Jameis is back too, I'm also, by the way, not 100% convinced that they just go right back to Jameis Winston due to the New Orleans Saints, but I kind of feel like this Taysom Hill stuff is not going away. It's certainly not going away from like the goal line back stuff. Like he's a good player. And, you know, I always thought it was a little silly that people gave Taysom Hill so much crap and gave Sean Payton so much crap about the Taysom Hill stuff. And it certainly got a little out of control at certain times, but now that they're just basically kind of having him be a gadget player, he's very, very good in that role. And like Sean Payton is no longer there, but he's the guy that brought Taysom Hill into this. And Sean Payton is one of the best offensive minds in NFL history, right? So probably should give him a little slack for the fact that he thought this guy might bring something to the table. So
You go through my old timeline. I'm sure at times when they took Drew Brees off the field to play Hill, I'm sure I criticized it, and you could old takes expose me at some point. Because Sean Payton, you're totally right, brilliant offensive mind, but he also has a little bit of the vanity that he wants to remind you how smart he is. So there's some of that. And I thought it was a little bit overly, you know, the fancy play syndrome sometimes when they took Brees off the field to show you their Taysom Hill package. But I gave a long time ago. Peyton was right. Taysom Hill is a useful player. You can't live on a diet of Taysom Hill. He's like a relief pitcher. You know, you get to spot him the 50, 60 innings, you're going to use him. But it's a working thing, and we're going to see more of it.
Yeah, and especially now because they're taking the ball out of Andy Dalton's hands, not Drew Brees' hands, I think they'll be perfectly content to do more Taysom Hill stuff. You mentioned Chris Olave. Keep an eye out for the fact that he got a concussion, left the game on a touchdown that I'm honestly surprised they overturned back to being a touchdown when they ruled it incomplete on the field. He's just a baller, man. Such a good player. Looks awesome out there. Hopefully he can come back ASAP because he just looks incredible. On the Seahawks side of this, man, I'm telling you, those numbers for Geno, too, like 3 passing touchdowns, 268 yards, he earned those, too. He looked awesome dropping some, you know, passes in the bucket to Tyler Lockett. And it's amazing that Scott, whoever plays with Tyler Lockett, just ends up becoming the most efficient quarterback in the NFL because Lockett is that good.
Yeah, man, is Seattle ever winning that breakup? Also, I just want to throw a bone to Alvin Kamara, who I've been down on all season, had a monstrous game, 29 touches, just under 200 total yards. If you're a Kamara manager, you're frustrated he didn't get any touchdowns, and they may not be coming soon because they have other options now. But I've been pretty harsh on Kamara, and he had a great game against the Seattle team that gives it away. You know, I feel like I say this every week. We're going to look back and say Lockett was one of the steals of the draft season, and Metcalf at least is going to outkick his coverage at ADP. They were right answers. Lockett was a screaming right answer, and Metcalf was the right answer. And I have some of it. I just wish I had a lot more of it because Geno Smith. You would take Geno Smith. Russell Wilson might be hurt. You know, we're not going to talk about the Broncos today, but you would take Geno Smith in a fantasy league. Yeah, if you had Geno Smith and somebody offered you Russell Wilson, you'd be like, stop texting me. Don't lose my phone number. Don't, you know, I have the internet too, man. Geno Smith is one of the quarterbacks we can trust right now. I mean, this is the great thing about fantasy. You go to some very strange places, and that's where I'm at. Geno Smith, circle of trust.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was like one of my last few round picks in the Scott Fish Bowl. And I'm like thanking my lucky stars I ended up taking him because he's my QB2 every single week. And I agree with you on that point. Obviously, Andy and I will talk more about the Seahawks running back situation with Ken Walker on the waiver show, everything like that. But man, I really feel for Rashad Penny, fractured tibia, you know, probably going to need surgery. He just had a quote last week, you know, about how he felt he was letting the fans down by getting hurt all throughout the early portions of his career. So really feel for that guy. But let's move on to the next game here. Chargers 30, Browns 28. Really interesting game overall. I saw Next Gen Stats put out that this was like the first time two different players gained 70 plus rushing yards over expectation in the same game since 2018. Our guy, Austin Eckler, was the most. Nick Chubb was right there, plus 70 as well. Eckler ends up with 20 touches, 199 total yards, two total touchdowns. All the weeping and gnashing of teeth from the first 3 weeks has pretty much been erased by two monster games for Eckler here to start the rest of the way.
I mean, I don't know much to add about Eckler other than he's great. He's great on the pod. He's great on the football field. Do take note that Josh Kelly had 10 carries and a touchdown and has at least marked his territory as the number two option here. So if you're – I'm not really an insurance guy at running back. I like to get the backups for other people's running backs. But if you're speculating, if Eckler were to miss time, who would be the guy? We have to assume by the usage that Joshua Kelly has moved into that chair. So that's worth noting. I just love watching Nick Chubb's my favorite running back to watch in the league right now. Just so fluid. He averaged over 5 yards a carry for his entire career. It's funny because I was kind of calling Penny the poor man's Chubb the last couple of weeks. Maybe it was last week, and now we're not going to have Penny for a while. But I'm just so excited to see the Browns, you know, getting Chubb unleashed and you know, follow the money can work and cannot work. I'll give you an example of it not working later in the show. But if you follow the money with David Njoku, he's terrific. In a year where there's no right answers at tight end other than just a couple of guys, David Njoku is no longer like a start sit question. He's like, yeah, I got him. I'm playing him. I'm loving it. And I realize there's a, you know, a rock we don't want to turn over right now, but the Browns may eventually have a better quarterback later in the season, you know, with all the stuff that comes with that. So David Njoku, he's just not just in the circle of trust. I mean, he's got a, you know, extra privileges. He's in the executive dining room and, you know, executive washroom and all that stuff. I have a fair amount of Njoku because I'm a Frank Schwab friend. I know he talked up Njoku before the season. You guys were talking about him on the preview show. So Frank got me doing Njoku in a couple of leagues, and I'm feeling great about that because tight end is just brick, 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 brick.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's like if you have David Njoku, you better be feeling pretty great right now at this point.
I was also going to say, you know, I really was ready to trust Gerald Everett. It was frustrating to see him. I don't know if he got hurt in this game. He only had two targets and one catch. You know, look, every tight end's going to have some games like that, especially the secondary tight ends. But I would have thought before this week you said Everett or Njoku, I would have said, well, I like them both, but Everett for the quarterback, you know, for being tied to Herbert. Now I just have to think that maybe just Njoku being younger and more dynamic of a player, maybe that was the right answer all along.
There's a team. Oh, my God. There's a team that I drafted David Njoku, dropped him after week one and picked up Gerald Everett. So that sucks. boy, what a fun time fantasy football is. I was going to ask you about Amari Cooper, who I feel like is the ultimate, we'll talk about Gabe Davis later in the show, like another just ride the waves type of guy at wide receiver because the highs can be so high. Amari Cooper obviously coming off a one catch performance against the Falcons last week, but he's now had double digit targets in 3 of 5 games this year. He gets in the box again. He's a guy that, look, he certainly has a very low floor because I think he's a volatile player. I think he's an inconsistent player, but also he's playing on a run heavy team. But I feel like he's a guy that you kind of want to break ties in favor of starting unless you're absolutely loaded.
I mean, you want to talk about narrow passing tree. They basically threw to three guys today. They threw to Peoples Jones. They threw to Njoku. They threw to Cooper. They don't throw. They have never wanted to throw to Chubb that much. They only had three targets for Hunt. So at least I know the first week they said that Cooper was open. If you watched the all 22, but Brissett couldn't find him. For the most part, Cooper has showed up every week. If we give him credit for being open in week one, I think he's a lower end wide receiver too right now. He's somebody who's probably too good to be in start sit questions anymore, unless you're in a very shallow league, because Brissett has been competent enough. And again, do they want to throw the ball a lot? No. But when they throw it, it's probably going to one of three guys.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right, next game up here, Eagles 20, Cardinals 17. I mean, the Eagles give us kind of what we expect at this point, although obviously AJ Brown, bit of a slower game, Devontae Smith, bit of a higher game. But I wanted to talk about the Cardinals here real quick because, look, the Cardinals, they're not a good team, right? They stink. But Kyler Murray, I wouldn't say is playing his best ball this year, but Marquise Brown, you know, was a guy that I kind of went back and forth a bit, you know, coming into this offense. But Marquise Brown looks pretty awesome for this team right now. He has 8 catches again today, scores another touchdown, and kind of quietly, Rondale Moore puts up another decent game here. He ran a route on 93% of the team dropbacks, which was tied for Zach Ertz for second on the team. Marquise Brown ran a route on every single dropback. You know, 8 targets for Rondale Moore, 7 catches for 68 yards. He's at least kind of I mean, this was another like puny little air yard game for him, 2.3 air yards per target. But I feel like Rondale Moore is kind of getting into a guy that's like, okay, like if you have to consider throwing him out there in your flex, you're feeling pretty good about it right now.
Yeah, you know, I'll start with Hollywood. I blew it with Hollywood Brown. He was one of my most drafted players last year. And this year he goes to Arizona, the college hookup and all that. And I think I let the poor taste in my mouth about Cliff Kingsbury just not trusting him at all. And the way Kyler Murray's season ended, we know he was reluctant to run. He was hurt in the second half of the year. I just thought this team's moving in the wrong direction. They were the last team. People are going to forget this. They were the last team to lose last year. You know, they were the Miami Dolphins champagne team. Mm-hmm. They were 7-0, I think. Yeah. It was at one point. Ben, is that, I mean, NFL seasons are like dog years, right? They just, it seems like it was 5 years ago, but it was just last year. So I did not want to proactively, Frank talked me into James Conner in one league. I had Zach Ertz in some tight end leagues, but I wasn't proactive with Murray. I wasn't drafting Hollywood. I think Hollywood was the right answer. Now the question is, what happens when they get DeAndre Hopkins back? I think what they're doing with Hollywood is too good. I think that this, the toothpaste is out of the tube now. It's not going back. The genie's out of the bottle. He's going to be playable the rest of the year. Now, they had asked, I think I'm going to heard this again from you and Schwab on Thursday about Kyler, how come you're not running more? And he's like, oh, well, I do what they asked me to do, which is kind of taking a shot at Kingsbury, throwing him under the bus. Only 4 rushing attempts for Murray in this game. He does run for 42 yards. I feel like this offense has been mostly just Kyler run around, make stuff up, use your athleticism. We know he's a smaller quarterback that doesn't always lead to pocket play. I still don't like the card. I'm glad they got the money, against the spread. Also, man, that Dallas Goedert receiving prop was in the 40s against the Arizona seam coverage. I mean, giving away money, man. I'm sorry I didn't get a little bit more aggressive on that, although everything's easy when it wins. I mean, you hate your life when it doesn't. But
sure.
Arizona, man, I think I see your Rondale Moore take. That's taken under advisement. I think Hollywood's good to go the rest of the year. Whatever. It's about telling you anything you don't know. Hollywood Brown managers didn't come to this podcast to tell them they were right. I just wish I was riding there with you. I still don't really trust Kyler. I don't trust Cliff Kingsbury. And at least the Eagles, look, they only score 20 points. And I know it's frustrating. When the quarterback runs in a touchdown, what he basically does is gives the Heisman to everybody else in the offense because nobody else can score with that. So, okay, take it on the chin, A.G. Brown manager. But look at how narrow, look at how small this box score is, how narrow this usage is. Yeah, Brown's going to be fine. We talk about riding the waves with receivers. Goddard had a big game. Sanders got a bunch of usage. The Eagles are still undefeated. They have probably the best offensive line in football. I ranked them number 1 in my power rankings last week for fantasy. And I, even though Buffalo went crazy, I would still rank Philadelphia number 1 because I think they give us the most playability of any fantasy roster every week, no matter who the opponent is.
Yeah, I don't want to hear any complaining about anybody that's got A.J. Brown on their fantasy team, right? Like, you've been riding high up until this point. Like, you get 32 yards. Like, hey, guess what? That's going to happen, okay? But pretty much feel great about this this entire offense, really. And, like, Devontae Smith is kind of – it wasn't quite as extreme as Tyler Lockett because Lockett legitimately dropped to, like, the 11th round in some, like, industry drafts I was in. But – Devontae Smith, and I will cop to this, I ended up drafting a lot of Tyler Lockett, not as much Devontae Smith, because I didn't give myself enough wiggle room to be like, this guy, Devontae Smith, is a stud. He is so, so, so good. But I'm a little worried about the offensive construction, the quarterback play, even if I like Hurts, like how much can he really give us? The lack of imagination on Devontae Smith caused me to miss out on that guy despite liking the talent. And I think it happened with Lockett in a way too. Like, these guys that are sort of, I don't think either one of them is a traditional number 2 receiver. I think they are a 1B receiver to the 1A in their offense. And when the quarterback outkicks expectations by this drastic of a degree and the offense outkicks like the thought we had about the design of it, you can just create these super values at these number 2 receivers, these 1B receivers. And I feel like that's a lesson I'm taking away from the early part of this year.
Well said.
All right, next game up here, we got Cowboys 22, Rams 10. Oh, dude. I mean, the Rams stink, Scott. This is rough. I do not know how they are going to field a functional offense this year with that offensive line.
I loved Dallas plus the points all week. And I was saying to Schwab afterwards, I don't know why I didn't have Dallas money line because I thought this line looks stupid. What Dallas is great at is what the Rams aren't good at, right? And Dallas's defense was a horrible matchup for the Rams. We saw the Rams get exposed against the 49ers the previous week on Monday in front of everybody. we know the Rams don't really have a home field advantage. I'm sure this crowd was heavily Dallas weighted.
Oh yeah.
The Rams are Cooper Kupp being great. And he's not even like great to the level. Cooper Kupp is like the only thing that Matthew Stafford trusts right now, because he doesn't trust his protection. He doesn't trust his secondary receivers. He doesn't trust his own body.
He does trust Cam those Akers. Tyler Higbee screen targets, though.
Right. Like,
the
yeah. So you're playing Kupp every week and he'd go, you know, 1, 2, or 3 in a redraft. Okay, fine. And you play Higbee because tight end is so gross. The fact that Higbee's got like, you know, 6 for 52 on the table every week, that's good at tight end. Yeah, it's playable at tight end. It won't win you anything, but it'll keep you ahead of half the league. And occasionally he may catch a touchdown. I don't even want to talk about Allen Robinson. It's too depressing. Yes, you should cut him. It just, you know, time, father time is undefeated, man. It's just, what can I say? And plus, he's walking into the worst version of the Rams. He's walking through Stafford, not confident, maybe hurt, offensive line really struggling. And it's just Stafford has to lean on what he trusts, which is Kupp. So everything, this whole team is run like it's a Pop Warner team, and Cooper Kupp's father is the coach. Kupp's great, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But his usage doesn't make sense. You need to have other pitches. You can't throw you the same pitch every time. And I mean, they scored 10 points today. I feel like they could have played 3 more hours and still have 10 points. That's how great the Dallas defense was. Unfortunately, Dallas on offense played like they knew the Rams couldn't win. You know, we talk a lot with Kyle Shanahan, when the Niners get a lead, they kind of put the game on ice and they start running clock and just pounding away, and they're not going to throw the ball aggressively. Dallas knew they could play that way when they got the lead. So they played slow, and they slowed down usually. They usually do play at a pretty good pace, but they knew they could unplug this game and win it, and that's what they did. We're just going to have to wait. The Tony Pollard thing may never happen because Zeke's on a long deal, making big money. Pollard breaks off the long run today. Lamb was okay. I guess Dalton Schultz is somebody I have to give up on. I had hopes for him. I don't know. Dak's coming back, so maybe that's not the right take.
Did get hurt again in this game, though, so just injuries are
did he? Okay, yeah. I missed that. So I just knew that I would they throw 16 passes? They threw for 100 yards or so. I mean, they knew their defense. I don't blame them either. When the Rams' offense looked that horrible, you might as well just, I mean, they had a give up run on 3rd and 7 late in that game, just wanting to run the clock and say, okay, here's the ball, Rams. You think you can score twice? Go do it. And they obviously couldn't. So drop Robinson. You can't play Akers. You know what? In a shallow league, I think you could even drop Cam Akers. That may sound a little bit reactionary, but I just don't see any upside here.
No, I don't think there's a lot of upside. I think McVay has to, like, and we've seen him do this at certain times in his coaching era, like during the Jared Goff years, completely reimagine like the offense kind of on the fly. Even at times last year with Stafford, like they had to switch things up. And I feel like we're getting to that point with this offense. I mean, they had Stafford under center on like 40% of his snaps. Like, what is the point of going under center if you're Matthew Stafford right now and dropping back like 5, 6, 7 steps or whatever? By the time you get to that 5th step on your drop back, like, you're getting creamed at this point. So I feel like they have to really completely reimagine things on the fly, and that's the only way they can possibly do that. So yeah, I mean, it's tough with the Rams right now, because it pretty much is just, it's as simple as what you said. It's Kupp, it's Higbee, and that's all that we got there.
You know what they're getting, what they really need, and it's awful that they had that Niners game on Monday and then they had to come around on a short week. They play the Panthers, you know, credible defense. Obviously the Panthers offense is a joke. Then they get their bye week. They are screaming for a bye.
I know, because their line keeps getting hurt too. That's what makes it really rough. They're bad and injured.
Right. So they're getting the bye at the right time in week 7. I also want to just point, I'm going to write about this week, but week 6 is bye weeks starting. There's only 2 teams off next week. This is where this is your trading season. This is where you take stock. You know, how many points have I scored? Where do I deserve to be in the standings? How strong is my roster? I have a buddy of mine who's 0-4, and he's got the 2nd most points in his league. Shout out to Jim if you're listening. He's got Hurts, he's got Barkley, he's got this roster to die for, and an unbelievable bench, but he's just run really unlucky. And I told him, you don't need to do anything. If anything, you could probably upgrade some of your bench guys into better starters, but just keep scoring points. Hopefully you'll get some better luck going forward, but there's nothing wrong that you've done. Nobody wants to trade in September. You draft your team, you think it's great, nobody's hurt yet. Once we hit bye week season, you got hurt guys, you got guys who aren't playing, you have teams with bad records. This is when trades not only start happening, but this is when people start making mistakes. They start cutting guys they shouldn't. They start trading guys because they need to win right away, and they can't wait around for St. Brown, who's not playing in week 6. They need to win now, so maybe they'll trade to St. Brown off a quiet game at the wrong time. So bye weeks are, this is the elicitor for trades. This is where people have incentive to actually make changes, because the record will get in their head, and the unavailability of players will get in their head. So I want you to take advantage of that.
That's great advice. I also had a buddy today, shout out to David Thomas, if he is listening, telling that he's 0-4 and is running to literally the highest score every single week, right? And I was like, that's the game, dude. Like that's what happens, right? Like it can be like that sometimes. And you know, some of it's injuries, some of it's bad luck, stuff like that. So I agree. Like you definitely have to take stock of your roster and like don't give up. But you always got the people who are like, my season's over, whatever. Like it doesn't have to be over. You can at least, even if you're not gonna go the distance, you can at least go down fighting, right? And I actually feel like these Cowboys, you know, interestingly enough, are a team that I think everybody knows Dak is coming back, right? Like he might be back as soon as next week. But nevertheless, I feel like all of these guys, like Zeke is going to look much, much better when Dak is back there, I think, because they'll probably be in position to score more touchdowns. Like as much as Cooper Rush has kept the ship afloat, he hasn't lost yet as a starter. As much as he's kept the ship afloat, it's pretty clear that they're kind of cutting things down to the basic. And now I think they could cut things back to the basics a little more with Dak and like just be overall more efficient because Dak is a better quarterback than Cooper Rush. Don't want to hear any arguments to the contrary. So like CeeDee Lamb is going to look a lot better when Dak is back. Michael Gallup is going to look a lot better when Dak is back. 89.5% route participation for Michael Gallup this week. Had one crazy catch down the sideline, 5 targets overall, you know, 8 targets for CeeDee Lamb. He's the only player in the NFL, I saw JJ Zacharyson put this out, that has had a 30% target share in every single game this year. You know, like he's out Cooper Cupping Cooper Cup, right? In some aspects. So all these guys, I think, are good trade targets because they will be better here in the next few weeks, at least from a touchdown perspective.
Yeah, the octane, the offense will be better. And so it will raise all the boats in the offense for sure.
All right, Bills 38, Steelers 3. My God, the Steelers got taken to the woodshed, mostly on the back of Gabe Davis, who we talked a lot with Frank. We talked a lot about Dalton with Gabe Davis this week, like what the deal was. You know, he was in the basement in terms of targets per route run was Gabe Davis. But it was also very clear he wasn't healthy, got in full participation in practice this week. And look, I think Gabe Davis is going to be a ride the waves player. Like Scott, he's never going to pop in your target share league. He's never going to pop in the targets per route run league, but he's not going to stop running those routes. Josh Allen's not going to stop existing. So who really cares?
Yeah, he's a guy that we need to feel confident he's close to 100% to play him. But we had that, I think we had that endorsement this week. We knew that he was ready to go. And the Bills passed to set up the pass. One of my worst calls of the week was believing that Devin Singletary's role the last 2 weeks would carry over. And then I watched Buffalo scoring like, you know, it was just like crazy. And Singletary was hardly involved. And in fact, I couldn't believe how late they kept Josh Allen in this game. And
yeah,
the fact that Josh Allen was running the ball when the game was so far out of hand, which I just think is reckless. Buffalo, you are one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl, probably the favorite right now. And it all goes kablooey if Josh Allen gets hurt. You got to save him from himself when these games are out of hand. You know, Kenny Pickett didn't have a 30-point comeback. He's not Frank Reich. This is not, you know, the 1990s or whatever it was. So I'd hate to see Buffalo get an injury at a time. You have to finish the game out. I get it, but it just seems reckless to have Allen doing that thing. But I don't know. I don't know what to do with Singletary, man. I thought all I wanted was double-digit touches, right? I wasn't expecting 23 touches or 25 touches or even goal line equity. I know that Allen's kind of their goal line back, and they're probably going to throw for their touchdowns anyway. But to see him not even get the 10 touches in a game like this, because Buffalo, you know, we talked about teams that when they get the lead will, you know, put it on ice and run the ball and kind of just bleed the game away. You know, Buffalo's stepping on your throat, throwing the ball even more, which is fun and exciting. But that doesn't fit into Singletary. I think I had him a tier too high, and I had him getting the circle of trust privileges probably prematurely. That was a bad call on my part. Also, I know some people ask me Gabe Davis or questions in the start sit. I might have given out a few Gabe Davises, but I'm sure I told a couple people not to play Gabe Davis because I liked their other option. And then I immediately felt sick to my stomach when Gabe Davis scores a 98-yard touchdown like 3 minutes into this game or whatever it was. So here's the bottom line. Buffalo's got the most reliable passing game in the league right now. If Gabe Davis is clear of the injury report, I want you to proactively play him the rest of the season. I know that it's screamingly obvious now, but he's not a start sit guy for me anymore. As long as he's on the injury report, man, you want a piece of this offense, and he's going to make enough splash plays. Yeah, he won't be the target monster. He won't be the routes run monster, but he's going to be an important part of the best passing offense in the NFL, and that's good enough.
Yeah, like you might get a 3 for 23 in your lineup one of those times, but you also might put this on your bench, like what we got here in week 5, and you never want to put this on your bench. I think part of the problem for Devin Singletary was that, like, the last couple of weeks, Gabe Davis was clearly hobbled. You know, Isaiah McKenzie, Jameson Crowder in and out of the lineup. Khalil Shakir gave him something as their number three receiver, 72% route participation, 16.6 air yards per target. I really like Khalil Shakir. I don't know how long he's going to hold a roll down because, you know, McKenzie could be back at some point. But, you know, definitely got to keep your eye on it, for a team that even when Jameson Crowder was healthy, they were splitting snaps with him and Isaiah McKenzie. So, I mean, Josh Allen, just anybody attached to Josh Allen is going to be good. On the Steelers side, man, I mean, I don't have too much on this. Like, this was kind of a throwing Kenny Pickett to the Wolves moment for his first start. Pretty much middle of the pack in terms of EPA per dropback, 6.98 air yards per attempt, which is for the Steelers and decent. But, you know, I will say this, my one takeaway from their passing game was George Pickens, despite all the excitement this week, still struggling to separate from Chase Claypool, fewer routes than Chase Claypool, fewer targets than Chase Claypool. And, you know, Deontay Johnson ends up with 155 air yards and a 26% target share. So I'm not going to totally judge the Steelers here in their passing game, but I did at least want to ask you about Najee Harris, Scott, because like that's a guy that has been one of the clear wrong answers so far. Only 43% of the snaps today. And some of it might have been that they were pulling him because like the Steelers were pulling guys before the Bills were pulling guys and they were the losing team. But so some might be that they're playing Jaylen Warren a little bit more because it was a blowout. But still, Jaylen Warren's like mixed into here a little more than folks, I think, would have thought going into the year.
Yeah, it doesn't look good for Harris. I mean, the Buccaneers, Dolphins, Eagles coming up, Saints. This was part of the idea of why maybe they wanted to hold off on the Pickett change because you didn't want to throw him to the Wolves. But ultimately, Trubisky was so bad and Pickett was decent enough in that trial against the Jets that they're like, okay, screw it, we'll just do it now. And then they go to Buffalo and you wonder, you just hope Pickett didn't get the confidence beat out of him. I still think Pickens is going to run by Claypool like a parked car. I know the usage doesn't indicate that, although they were much more efficient when they threw the ball to Pickens. And of course, Deontay Johnson, nobody gets 13 targets in on an offense that goes nowhere on a Sunday that like Deontay Johnson does, man. It's almost like the stats are wrong. Like they just add five to whatever Deontay Johnson has, you know, or add seven, you know. Yeah. But didn't do a heck of a lot with it. I think Pickens, actually, if I were redrafting now, the only guy I could draft proactively in this passing game is Pickens. And I know this is very little consolation to the Harris people, but just hope for a big game and then try to trade him. You know, go to somebody who's running back screwed the next week after Harris shows you something you can market and try to get out of the Harris business. You can't do it right now, but if it's eventually he'll fall into a 100-yard game with a touchdown or something that week, I'd be going to people who are running back desperate. And don't say, oh, look, I'm looking to trade Najee Harris. Look to trade a running back and try to meander your way into the Harris discussion. That's how you do that. But it may be hard to do because this Pittsburgh offense, Mike Tomlin famously has not been under 500 his entire career. I don't think this team is savable. I don't think it's – now, look, you don't want to overreact to a loss to Buffalo, but they just lost to the Jets at home the previous week. I mean, there's a lot of problems in Pittsburgh right now, obviously.
Oh, yeah, 100%. All right, next game up here, NFC South matchup. Bucks 21, Falcons 15. A lot of discussion about, you know, what might be the worst roughing the passer call in human history. But we'll save that for another conversation, unless you really want to hit on it, Scott. No fantasy value in the Falcons today. I mean, Drake London ends up getting 7 targets, but was limited in terms of route participation. That backfield, like Arthur Smith must be loving about the fact that, you know, in fantasy circles, we're like Tyler Allgeier, Caleb Huntley, Avery Williams scores a damn touchdown. So tough scene there. On the Bucs, though, this was Leonard Fournette's get right game, a lot through the air as well.
Yeah, all those targets. Brady throws for 3 Bills, but only the 1 touchdown. Marcus Mariota, maybe the rare mobile quarterback who doesn't hold fantasy value. They don't want to throw the ball a lot. I don't know what Smith's doing. Of course, a guy, Avery Williams, scores the touchdown. Nobody was playing him. Really disappointing game for Drake London.
Converted cornerback, by the way, for Avery Williams. So this is just another feather in the cap there.
When is Ridder going to play? That's my question for you. We've already seen Pittsburgh's already pulled the switch. What do you think Atlanta makes the change?
That's a great question.
Do they make the change?
That I think is the appropriate question, because there were times when Arthur Smith, right towards the dawn of the season, was asked, like, how much, you know, practice reps is Desmond Ridder getting? And he was like, you know, I mean, he's always pissed off in all of his press conferences. He's a very ornery fella. he was just like rolling his eyes, like saying, oh, this is brutal. Like, come on. Like, what are we talking about Desmond Ridder for? So I don't know if that says anything, but I mean, Mariota, you're right to point out that even when you're watching him, like he scrambles around in the pocket, you know, he makes guys miss like incoming pass rushes. I'm like, oh, this is exciting. And then he throws the ball and it's like, okay, well, there goes all the excitement, right? Cause he just doesn't have a lot of juice as a thrower, not a very like creative thrower of the football. So I don't know that Desmond Ridder's the answer either, but it's probably going to, I think they'll hold out a lot longer because they're like 2-3 and they're kind of in this whole thing than we might like.
That's kind of a statement on the NFL right now where there are a lot of teams that are mediocre, that have flaws, but there aren't, a lot of times we see like there's like three or four teams that are horrible and they're already rebuilding and everything. And nobody's that bad.
No.
I mean, you might've said before this week, if I said, who's the worst team in football, you might've said Houston, they just won. Right. A few weeks ago, I thought Seattle might've been a bottom five team. They've been plucky the last few weeks, you know, Atlanta has a couple of wins. I don't think the Giants are any good. They're 4-1 for crying out loud. The NFL, I think it's a whirlpool league this year where it's more towards the middle. There aren't that many great teams. There are a couple teams that legitimately are great, but there aren't that many of them. Like the sixth or seventh seed in the NFC could be very, very flawed teams. I can't wait to pick against the Giants once they make the playoffs, which they probably will at this point. But I just think there's more clustering at the middle. I also feel I don't have any quantification for this, but I feel like there's been more minefields, more bricks, more misses, more things going wrong in fantasy than right. I don't think there's as many right answers this year as there normally are. That's just a gut feel. Somebody could have data that actually proves that that's anecdotal, or, you know, every season feels weird in its own way. That's just the way the NFL chaotically runs every season. But I've been struggling to find things I can anchor myself to that I can trust week to week. I feel like there's less of that this year than there usually is.
I think part of it is because some of the like clear cut right answers have been quarterbacks, which is rather rare, right? Like, especially in the last few years, it's been so much like just nail running back and wide receiver, and that's what matters. I think, and you know, this is an early season take, so I'm just kind of trying to put my mind around it now, Scott. Like, I do think because passing games are so spread out, and there's so, there's so much talent at the wide receiver position. I mean, you go down like, I mean, a guy like Elijah Moore is doing nothing for you in fantasy. And I'm like, I swear to you, he's a good player. I swear to you, he's open on all these routes. And he put it in the box score last year. But like, you just look at the Jets. We're going to talk about them next, and so I probably shouldn't bleed into it. But like, the Jets have so many good receiving options, and they're not even a good offense, right? Like, and then there are these teams like Tampa Bay have a ton of good receivers, and they are, you know, relatively good offense. So I feel like that there is so much week-to-week variance at the wide receiver position. And maybe that's why I feel like people have been complaining about that more than ever this year. And it's like, I mean, this is what the wide receiver position is now. Like, there are going to be so few set it and forget it type guys. I mean, you know, people complain about like Michael Pittman catching 5 for 50 on Thursday night. And, you know, I was like, hey, that might be a win, right? Like that, if that's your floor game, that's not so bad at this point.
That's a good, bad game. I think you nailed it with the usage being spread out. There's more fantasy irrelevant points being put up that it's just, The teams use, every team has a backfield committee pretty much now, except for just a couple of teams, and three wide receivers, such a standard thing. Some teams use multiple tight ends. So it's harder to get, I mean, I came up playing fantasy where every NFL team was two receivers, you know, and maybe use the tight end, and the quarterbacks didn't run as much. And
yeah, that's key. The running quarterbacks, like that's taking like so much juice away from receivers.
That's a lone wolf. When the quarterback runs it, when Jalen Hurts runs it in, man, nobody else is benefiting from that. And also, this is a really strange shape of quarterback this year. Okay. If you went early, if you were brand name quarterback, you got Josh Allen, you're feeling great. Mahomes has been fine. Herbert's been fine. Lamar Jackson, you know, he's dynamic. Burrow's been okay. Hurts has been excellent. Okay. Now it gets rocky. I'm just going off ADP here. Murray's been okay. Brady, rocky. Russell Wilson, it's been really ugly, and he's hurt. Dak Prescott got hurt. Trey Lance got hurt. Aaron Rodgers is not winning you anything. Matthew Stafford, it's frustrating to watch him play. And Derek Carr, I think, has been not a brick maybe, but a net loss. That's like 7 or 8 quarterbacks in a row. Middle, we talk about the running back dead zone. This year, it's been a quarterback dead zone.
Yeah.
And we all thought if you were drafting Brady or Wilson or Dak, you weren't trying to hit a home run. You're just like, oh, well, I got, you know, good old safe Tom Brady, 35, you know, 4,500, you know, or Aaron Rodgers coming off two MVPs. How bad could he be? Okay, maybe you're worried about his support cast. Dak Prescott's always solid. Russell Wilson's got weapons. He's changing teams at the right time. You could have landed on any of those guys, and they're all hurting you.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's the thing. It's like you can look at your roster and be like, this is brutal. But then you look around the rest of the league and it's like there's a lot of those landmines there. So we'll keep trying to figure it out. That's for sure. But first, Scott and I are going to take a quick break before we recap the rest of the week five games. All right, Scott, Jets 40, Dolphins 17. Give us the Breece Hall love, man.
Yeah, shoving everybody out of the way, and not just Michael Carter, although Carter got the two, you know, vulture touchdowns, but shoving the passing game to the backseat. It was the Breece Hall show. Nobody had more than four targets. Wish I had this guy in all of my teams. And I talked about following the money. Sometimes it's right, sometimes it's wrong. I followed the money in the Miami backfield and ended up with Chase Edmonds on a few teams. I didn't have him everywhere, yeah. But I was proactive on Chase Edmonds.
Same.
And I should have followed the Mostert. Raheem Mostert, and we'll see if he can stay healthy. Look, every running back is an injury risk, so I don't really want to put that on Mostert because anybody can get hurt. Even indestructible Jonathan Taylor is hurt now. But Mostert gets 18 carries. Edmonds gets one. I mean, Evans basically didn't play in this game, and then they hitched their wagon to Mostert. I realized the game got out of hand and everything, and Miami was down to its third-string quarterback almost as soon as the game started. But I wonder if Chase Edmonds is a drop now. And I'm afraid – you know, before the season, you talked about, and I thought this was a great take, getting second-year receivers. Elijah Moore is a big part of that. And when his liftoff was muted, I thought, well, maybe it's because Garrett Wilson's so good. And Corey Davis is still here. And, you know, they'll throw to Conklin sometimes. But they played in a way today. They kind of wanted to hide Wilson, Zach Wilson. They didn't throw the ball proactively. And there are too many good players on this offense to not be – if they're not going to give you volume in the passing game, then we got a problem. And yep. Market share is going to tell you, going to lead you down the wrong path here. Because like, well, market share of what? What's the pie we're splitting up? 25 pass attempts? This is going to be the Breece Hall with a dash of Michael Carter show. If the Jets, and the Jets defense has been good some weeks, awful some other weeks. If they can keep games within range, they're going to have Zach Wilson playing a muted version of offense. And that's really bad news if you need Jet receivers.
A lot of ways we can go there. I'll say just real simple on the Miami thing. I agree with you that, like, you got to throw. Dude, Teddy Bridgewater was out of this game before I even got home from the FFL studio. Like, okay, I live 15 minutes away from this place. Like, we had no shot with the Dolphins there. I do wonder if that trickles down to Mostert at some point, but for now, 69% of the snaps, 73% of the rushing attempts for this team. Like, I think he's going to be a guy that you're considering and playing. And yeah, I agree with you on Chase Edmonds as a possible drop. The Jets are more complicated. Because they're too good, right? There's too much talent here. And I feel like I've been talking about Breece Hall's air yards per target nonstop for like 3 weeks now. The guy was averaging coming into this game 5 air yards per target, which is bonkers at the running back position. And he caught 2 passes for 100 yards. And those weren't like behind the line of scrimmage, you know, and run all the way there. Like, he caught a couple downfield ones here. The guy is dynamic, and he looks like the best of a very talented offense. He looks like the guy with potentially the most juice here. And like, I love Elijah Moore. I love Garrett Wilson. And, you know, Corey Davis is a pretty good, like, to have Corey Davis, your number three receiver, is very, very good. And just Zach Wilson's not there to be the rising tide that lifts all boats. So I'm going to have trouble trusting any Jets receiver at any point until we see more from Zach Wilson. Cause you're right. It's like two different offenses, the Joe Flacco offense and the Zach Wilson offense.
Right, yeah. Flacco set the, you know, courtesy of Evan Silva and Pro Football Reference, he set the record for most pass attempts in the first 3 weeks of an NFL season. The volume was insane. That's out the window now. In the case of rookie running backs, we always wonder when a rookie running back isn't the clear guy to start the season, but you know he's eventually going to be quote-unquote the guy, when does he spread his wings and just say, this is my backfield? Obviously, Hall has done that. He probably did it before this week, but this was the emphatic, you know, the here I am now, entertain me moment. So,
yeah.
Hall, if I were redrafting, Matt, I think you could take him in the second round. I really do.
Yeah. I wish I had him on more teams. And you just kind of have to live with the fact that Michael Carter scored those touchdowns. And it's a little extra tilting that Breece Hall was on the field with Michael Carter when he scored both those touchdowns, because they do put those two on the field together. But like, just take all of the good that you got out of Breece Hall there and try not to be too greedy with the whole thing. Moving on, next game here, Vikings 29, Bears 22. This game feels pretty simple. Like, the Vikings guys did what they're going to do. They had their big games. Really, the one interesting note here was David Montgomery returns from injuries and just puts Khalil Herbert right back on the bench. You know, regardless of what you think about Khalil Herbert and how good he is, I mean, David Montgomery goes right back to playing his like workhorse role here.
Yeah, I wanted in my contract I didn't have to talk about the Bears, but I guess that's still being negotiated. So
yeah, we're not from what I've heard, Scott, their management is still working on that.
Here we are. You know, Cole Kmet smashed with 45 yards, you know, on everybody's waiver wire. Montgomery got there in the passing game with a cheap touchdown. They couldn't run on Minnesota at all. It was frustrating the Vikings got the late 2-point conversion to make this game a push, because I felt like the Bears should have covered. Let's talk about the good stuff. Let's talk about Dalvin Cook looking healthy, getting a couple of touchdowns. And we're getting the last 2 weeks we've gotten the Justin Jefferson we were promised, right? Okay, here are the Rams coaches. He's not the same player as Cooper Kupp, but we're going to basically do Cooper Kupp things. We're going to prioritize this guy. We're going to be proactive with him, creative with him, and we're going to target the heck out of him. And that happened in London. It happened this week. And, you know, if you were redrafting, I think Kupp would have to go first, as much as it just makes me nervous to dip my toe into that Rams offense. But Jefferson, clearly the number two receiver in fantasy right now, and you could take him before Kupp if you wanted to. And Kirk Cousins, in a year where there's so many quarterbacks who aren't playing well, I know Cousins, well, if you watch a full Cousins game, at some point you're going to be frustrated, but he's a plus quarterback. He's one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the league, and for fantasy, that's good enough.
I still think you could have Diggs over Jefferson, and I think that could be okay.
You could.
Yeah, I bet it. But those three guys, I think, are the only ones in that consideration anymore.
Diggs is so good, we don't even talk about him anymore.
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah,
we went to Diggs, the Bills game. He's great. We didn't even mention him, I think, once.
No, yeah, well, man, that must be good to be that good. All right, next game up here, Titans 21, Commanders 17. Oh, Scott.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean...
We were texting about this one.
We were. Yeah. Scott and I were texting about the fact that in our bold predictions piece, like, you know, Scott says Curtis Samuel's going to go off against this Titans team that can get beat deep. You know, I'm saying, oh, no. Yeah, I love Curtis Samuel. Scott's right about that. But Terry McLaurin's going to go off, and frickin' De'Ami Brown must have taken Amon-Ra St. Brown's shade from earlier this season personally. Goes out, two catches, 105 yards, two touchdowns. Sheesh.
With a minuscule, right? To quote the great Ian Hartitz, a minuscule route participation, right? It wasn't like they made this a priority. He was just a specialty guy who ran just a few routes. They hit on those plays. Obviously, Washington couldn't run the ball. Nice to see Brian Robinson just on a football field, but he didn't do much with his opportunity. They barely gave any chances to Antonio Gibson. So, you know, I don't know. You can be wrong for the right reasons. You can be right for the wrong reasons. I feel like we had a good angle to attack Tennessee, but I don't know how you come up with De'Ami Brown. And because, though, here's the thing. They hardly used him this game. They hit a couple of home runs with him.
Yeah.
But they're going to get Dotson back in a couple of weeks anyway. I wouldn't even bother picking up Brown in a league. I think it's just one of those things we'll laugh about. Oh, remember the week De'Ami Brown, you know, had two touchdowns when we were promoting every other Washington receiver this side of Art Monk? Just one of those things. And, you know, Tennessee, it's basically Derrick Henry and nothing else. I was hoping maybe Robert Woods would do something this week. He didn't. Nothing playable. The big play went to Westbrook Akini, who isn't fantasy viable. It's another team. They're very well coached. They have a decent defense, even with some of the personnel they've lost. I mean, Landry was a big hit. But once they think they can salt games away, it's going to be like, okay, Derrick, how do you feel about 30 touches today? Good? All right. That's how we're going to win. We're going to win playing 1977 football. So there's not... The Titans could end the season. Again, Vrabel's a hell of a coach. They've circled the wagons. They're 3-2 now. Maybe they'll be in the playoff discussion or win that division. But they're still going to be a bottom five team for fantasy because there's one guy you can play.
Yeah. 30 receiving yards for Derrick Henry. He's been making big plays
in the
passing game. Yeah, this is a thing now, I think, at this point. Thank God it is a thing. It needs to remain that. Robert Woods got a little banged up in this game. Keep an eye on that. They really can't afford more injuries in the pass catcher department. You know, this was a game where Wentz was trying to Wentz this game away so hard. And just, I think with Washington, you know, really struggling from a record standpoint, I wonder if they ride the whole season with Carson Wentz, or if they you know, try out Sam Howell, who had a nice preseason, rookie fourth rounder. Just it stinks because there is so much talent here in Washington, but we're at a pretty predictable ending point, which is the wheels are kind of coming off the Wentz wagon here.
There's a lot of you think what changes could they make? I still like Scott Turner as an offensive coordinator. I don't know how solidified things are for Ron Rivera. I don't think Ron Rivera is a great coach. I think he's a solid coach, though. I thought he was actually a good hire for the team when they really needed a culture change, which, of course, they still need because they have one of the worst ownership situations we've ever seen in sports history. I mean,
Yeah,
they fixed the nickname. That's great. The stench of the ownership is still here.
Did they fix the nickname?
It's not offensive anymore. It's just dumb.
Yeah.
They went from an offensive nickname to a great generic nickname to a dumb nickname. So that's, is that progress? I don't know. But they're obviously one of the worst run teams in sports. And I feel bad because I have some friends who are, one of the things about the Washington football team, which I prefer to call them, is the people who grew up as Washington fans, whether you grew up in that area or you're somebody like Matthew Berry, who just became a Washington football fan. You're fans for that team for life. They have such a loyal fan base, and they're so frustrated. They just want to blow this whole thing up, man. They don't like the stadium. They hate the ownership. They hated the nickname. And I just feel like Washington's been in the rut. I mean, they had that moment, right, with RG3 and Shanahan, and RG3 gets hurt in the playoff game, and that all went wrong so quickly. You deserve better, Washington fans. What can I say?
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. All right, next game here, Texans 13, Jaguars 6. Look, the Damian Pierce show just keeps on going, man. 29 touches in this game, 113 total yards. He's pretty much iced Rex Burkhead at this point. That's a right answer, Scott. That's like a, hey, I didn't get all like freaked out by people laughing at me because I was buying into the preseason too hard. That was just, you know what, following a steady drumbeat, he's good, man. Like he looks these numbers. He looks that good out there.
Yeah. You know, Pierce really won me over. I was already in Pierce's corner, but he really won me over last week when they were way behind against the Chargers and they still prioritized him. So that showed me, okay, he's not going to get scripted out. Now, what ticks me off, Matt, is last week in the bold predictions, I was all about Travis Etienne, and I was all about, look, this James Robinson thing. I know the comeback story is great, but it's built on a lot of long runs and a couple of long runs where the defense wasn't there, where any competent running back would have probably scored a 50-yard touchdown. I'm happy that Robinson's made the comeback. I've always liked him as a player, but he's not special. He's kind of more of an ordinary talent. And I thought, okay, they're going to be behind in the Philadelphia game. This is a clear spot for Etienne to get a bigger role. The offense, they didn't do it at all. He ran routes and stuff, but he hardly touched it. And I know Lawrence was terrible in that game, and Trevor Lawrence has hardly seen rain in his whole life. And so maybe that was part of the narrative. So I've been telling people all along, you got to sell high on James Robinson. And then some reasonable people, like my friend Joe Dolan, is like, well, wait a minute. Don't you want to get that Houston game first, and then you can really sell high?
I said the same thing.
Same thing, I'll wear sure. That one too. And you know what? That was perfectly reasonable, plausible take. And I backed off and said, "Yeah, I'm still thinking selling on James Robinson, but wait, because here comes Houston." So what happens? It's the ETN game. Not that ETN went bonkers by any means, but it certainly showed the seeds were planted where he could be their featured guy or their more efficient player. And you know the chances of getting ETN for a song, which you could have a week ago, that's going to change now. And what you could have gotten for Robinson may have changed. You could have even, if you did sell him last week, you could have even used this Houston game as an enticement. So I feel like I had a good ETN Robinson take last week. It didn't play out. It looked stupid, as a matter of fact. And so I did what anybody reasonable would do. I backed off it. And now, you know, what I thought was going to happen ended up happening. So you frustrate me, Jaguars. I'm also not sure. We gave Trevor Lawrence a mulligan, right? He had the worst coaching and everything went wrong in Jacksonville last year. We couldn't find out anything about Trevor Lawrence. And when he played pretty well in September, he wasn't, you know, marvelous or an MVP candidate, but I thought, okay, here we go. Doug Peterson's good. The receivers aren't bad. Kirk's working out. After the last couple of weeks, especially against the Houston team, I know they're scrappy and everything. They're still one of the weakest teams in the league. I don't know about Trevor Lawrence. Where are we standing on this guy's future? Because I thought I'd be more confident in Trevor Lawrence right now than I am. Right now, I really don't know what to make of this guy.
Yeah, I think he's been good, not great so far this year. And I definitely think it's worth, I've said that on the podcast a couple times, I think it's worth saying that this is basically his rookie year, right? The first year he's getting NFL coaching. Like you said, you kind of got to give him a mulligan for last year, but just like also keeping in mind that the effects of the trauma of the Urban Meyer year will continue to live on. However, that being said, this was a really discouraging game today. You could kind of say the whole rain thing last week. This one, I don't know that he's got like a baked in excuse. And I thought what was interesting in Mike Sando's QB Tears article that he does every year for The Athletic.
So good.
There was a Which is a great, yeah, you should read it every
Mike Sando's year. Terrific, period. Read everything Sando writes.
100% agree with that. There are a few folks that he, you know, surveyed. If you're not familiar with the article, welcome to football media. But like, he basically surveys like high ranking people in the league and like ends up putting quarterbacks into tiers or whatever. Geno Smith, the lone member of tier five. I think he's going to move up this year. But basically what I thought was interesting was there were a lot of folks that there were at least a handful of folks that he surveyed, included in the piece, that were kind of like, I'm not going to give Trevor Lawrence a mulligan for last year. And in fact, like what I saw last year was enough to like make me sell on the idea that he has any sort of future as like that guy, like the best prospect since Andrew Luck, like, which I thought was interesting and kind of counter to the narrative like that we just said. So I don't know. I'm kind of thinking that maybe, yeah, I don't want to write off Trevor Lawrence or anything like that, but maybe he levels out as a good, not great quarterback. I do think that's possible.
Yeah, I wonder how much of his success at Clemson might have been built on hitting the easy button with guys being really open. And yes, his mobility played a lot more in college than it does in the NFL. There's just certain stuff that he could run in college that isn't. He's not gonna be Jalen Hurts in the NFL. He's not gonna be the best version of Kyler Murray in the NFL. And I'm concerned. I'm concerned. And also, yeah, I was ready just to think that Christian Kirk was an automatic guy. And if I have concerns about Lawrence, Kirk now is, I'm backing off a little bit on him. I thought he was emphatically a right answer a few weeks ago. Now I think he's more of a, yeah, I'll field your Christian Kirk start sit question on Sunday, and I hope I get it right.
Yeah, and the only reason I say all this stuff with Trevor Lawrence, like, and I'm willing to say too that like I like Christian Kirk, but like, come on, they're playing like the ghost of Marvin Jones, like Evan Ingram and Zay Jones. Like the offensive line's not perfect. Like the running game's a little hit or miss. As good as James Robinson's been in fantasy, it's not like he's been a like steady, consistent runner on a rush by rush basis. But at the same time, you know, again, when you're billed as like the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck, like Andrew Luck got into the league and like from snap number one, you're like, oh yeah, like he was doing stuff with remember when Donnie Avery was like his top receiver, Scott, you know, and they still went to the playoffs. They were still a great team. So I think that's a good question to bring up with Trevor Lawrence. I'm not writing him off or anything like that, but it's at least worth like kind of raising an eyebrow at it.
There's a difference between first round quarterback and number one overall pick quarterback. When you nail the number one, when you take the number one pick as a quarterback, and it was Trevor Lawrence proactively. It wasn't like, oh, there's nobody good to take, I guess we'll take Trevor Lawrence. I mean, it was like tank for Trevor, right? Yeah. There's a whole season of, oh, what are the Jets doing? Don't win that game. You're going to miss out on Trevor Lawrence. And now here we are. We don't know if Trevor Lawrence is good, and Zach Wilson's got all sorts of growing pains. The Trey Lance discussion keeps getting put off a year. It's not satisfying. Let me just leave you with this. Rest of the season, who would you take, James Robinson or Travis Etienne starting now?
I'll go Travis Etienne.
Me too.
I was very concerned about Travis Etienne. And yeah, just with Trevor Lawrence again, I think we agree he's good. It's just whether is he going to be great, I think, is kind of where I'm at least with Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, we probably line up there. I'm still willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, but maybe he's not going to be, oh, we just set up our franchise for 10 years, Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, that makes sense. Hey, hopefully people got up and set their fantasy lineups for this London game, Scott. You know, show a little personal responsibility. Giants 27, Packers 22. where are we at with these two weird teams here, man?
You know, every week I've been asking you and other Yahoo people, you know, is there a right answer in the Giants receiver room? I guess not. Should I be stashing Tony? Should I be stashing this guy, that guy? And Darius Slayton, who I just assumed the Giants had given up on and decided he wasn't any good. He was part of that, you know, my N'Keal Harry PTSD draft. He was drafted in the sixth round, had a good rookie season. He's done almost nothing since then. 6 for 79 isn't cause for a parade, but I mean, he was their best receiver today. And I don't know, man. Maybe he's got, I play in some deeper leagues. I play in some 12 team leagues with multiple flexes, some 14 and up leagues. I'm kicking myself for not having Slayton. Although maybe how could you feel good about the Giants passing game? You know, the Packers, I said last week, I thought they were moving to a core four, the two backs, and then Lazard and Dobbs. And so what do they do this week? They get the Randall Cobb rejuvenation game where he looks great. And man, what do the Packers do at halftime? When things are going great for this team at halftime, they just want to unplug, man. And they didn't score in the second half, and they blew a 17-point lead. I thank God I didn't have in Survivor. I may have had a money line parlay with them, which was kind of a square, dumb play. But they frustrate me, man. I feel like I had some confidence in the Packers offense last week, although they almost lost to the Patriots. But the Giants defense is ordinary. You know, Wink Martindale's their coordinator, respect. But the Giants look more splintered down offense than they did a week ago, and that concerns me.
Oh, yeah. So many places to go here. I'll go Giants here at first because I'm glad you mentioned Darius Slayton. He was third on the team in routes per dropback, 67.7%. We'll see if he continues. This is, it's weird that Darius
was ahead
Slayton,
of
like Marcus Johnson, and I, well, he was tied for second with the great Richie James, by the way, for
they have 30. I would dare even Giant fans to name everybody who ran routes for them. I mean, these, you know, David Sills, the fifth. Yeah, I'm not over David Sills, the fourth yet, you know.
He got, David Sills got hurt, and that might have been the only reason.
Chris,
that, like,
Myrick. I don't even know what Chris Myrick is. Is he a receiver, a tight end, a fullback?
He's a tight end,
I don't, okay.
Think.
I admit I don't know anything about Chris Myrick. If you came here for Chris Myrick intel, I am going to fail you.
Dude, I think this is the most bizarre offense of all time. The Giants offense.
They're 4-1. How are they 4-1?
I know. How are they 4-1?
I mean, Grant, you played the Bears and stuff, but beating the Packers, that's a good pelt, man.
Yeah. Oh, dude. And like Brian Daboll was fired up after this game. I think a lot of it is Daboll. You know, we talked to Saquon Barkley on Eckler's Edge, and you know, it was all about like the culture change part of it. I think like this is definitely, by the way, every single one of these games, every single one of these wins for the Giants is like going to be a referendum on NBC's Jason Garrett, on the Patriots' Joe Judge, by the way, because this is not like a markedly different roster, right? Like, I mean, they've got Barkley back. That's awesome. But they're playing with a quarterback who they declined the fifth-year option, and no one fought them on that call, by the way. And like these goofball receivers, like, I say the term goofballs all the time. Like, this is the goofiest of goofballs that we've ever seen here at this wide receiver room. And I mean, like, all their name brand players are hurt or not playing well. It's crazy. I mean, it's bizarre. And like, even Darius Slayton's a guy that they tried to like get off the roster. Like, they tried to shop him. They tried to, you know, barely play him, and he's got to be a featured part now. So the Giants are very, very strange, but it all comes back to Saquon, who has been awesome this year. Missed a little bit of time in this game, still played on 67% of the team snaps. And was electric, so that's great to see. The Packers, man, I think you're right that they're a little bit of a bizarre team as well. How do you feel about A.J. Dillon right now? 6 carries, 34 yards, 0 targets. I kind of feel like the emergence of Dobbs, the emergence of Randall Cobb with 13 targets in this game. And Alan Lazard still has his role. I kind of feel like the emergence of those three, from a clarity standpoint at wide receivers, kind of hurt like the upside of A.J. Dillon, who, you know, Rodgers said he was going to get him 50 catches this year. I'm not so sure now.
Yeah, I was shocked to see the running backs not used in the passing game. Dillon literally not used at all, and only 3 targets for Aaron Jones, which is just not a good idea. They need to get back to hitting the easy button, which is Aaron Jones should have 3 to 6 catches a week, and A.J. Dillon can catch it. He doesn't have to catch it, but he can catch it. I know he didn't do it at BC, but when Green Bay has asked him to do that, he's been perfectly fine there. They made a mistake, I think, going away from that. It's, especially you talk about some of the goofballs they're throwing the ball to. I just don't understand it. The Packers are frustrated. LaFleur's a good coach. I get it. And they've been a team that's outkicked their metrics the last few years. They've won more games than they're supposed to. But eventually, Rodgers is going to be more towards the average level of quarterback play. He doesn't have special receivers. There's nobody really to drag him here. I don't think Lazard's a bad player. Dobbs has been pretty good for a rookie. They had Cobb flash today, but there's nobody, they don't have somebody who they're going to throw a 10-yard slant to and he's going to house it. That guy is not on this team. And the most talented offensive players they have are the running backs, and they didn't use them properly today. I think they'll actually fix that. I think LaFleur's a good coach. They'll do some self-scouting, and you'll see those running backs more involved in the passing game going forward.
Next game up here, Patriots 29, Lions 0. The Lions carnival really came to a screeching halt here, Scott.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to focus on the Patriots for a second. First of all, like most teams, they should wear their throwbacks. Their throwbacks should be their main uniforms. The glorious red Pat Patriot. They even had the Pat Patriot logo at midfield. It was terrific. And he'll never admit this, but Bill Belichick loves this Patriot team because he's got a little bit of Bobby Knight in him, where he wants to win and everything and be decorated, but he wants to be decorated because it's him and not his players. And what does he have right now? He has a pretty anonymous receiving room, and he's got the third-string quarterback playing. He's going to defense. He almost stole the game at Green Bay, which would have been a great win for Belichick. And then this week, you know, they beat the Lions pretty easily, shut him out, in fact, first shutout since the Jacoby Brissett's first start. Shout-out to my friend John Greco for that one. But Belichick, I think he really likes this team. I think he thinks he can sneak into the playoffs with this team, and Yeah, Zappe, man, Zappe's looked solid. We've always said about Jakobi Meyers, he just needs more touchdown equity. Well, he got touchdowns today. I don't want to read into the backfield usage, because just when you bury Harris, he's like going to get 17 carries next week. But this week was the Ramondre show, and I don't know if Harris maybe could have gotten dinged up in this game.
He got a hamstring injury.
Right. I thought that might have been the case. The thing with the Lions that made me nervous, and even last week when I was, you know, banging the drum for how fun their carnival was, is that the schedule really got a lot harder in the second quarter of the year. They're not the 49ers or the Cowboys, but they have a plus defense, and they certainly have a plus defensive mind. And there's more tricky matchups down the road for Detroit. I think what's going to happen is Detroit's going to hit a speed bump in October, kind of fitting because it's all construction in the Detroit area. It took me like 45 minutes to get out of the city the other night. It should have been a 10-minute ride. Not fun to drive in Detroit right now. I think the Lions might hit a bit of a patch. Of course, they get the bye this week. They need it.
Yeah.
Buy low. If you can, try to trade back into the Lions maybe in 2 or 3 weeks after they get through the teeth of their schedule. Today is not who they are. I mean, maybe they were riding too high after the first 4 weeks, but today was just wrong team, wrong time. I still feel good about most of the Lions on offense.
Yeah, Amon-Ra St. Brown, they said he was going to be on a pitch count. He was on a pitch count. Like, that's a guy I would love to try to buy low on if that is possible, just from the frustration angle. And
into their bye week. This is when you do it. If the St. Brown manager is 1-4, he may be incentivized to make a trade.
It's a great call. Great call there. Always love to play that little psychology. I feel like we kind of have to revise our Patriots take, like you said, Scott, because this thing is kind of getting narrowed down. The backfield by injuries, right? Like, I mean, Ramondre Stevenson, like let's say Damian Harris misses the next 2 weeks, where are you going to rank Ramondre Stevenson? You know, we got matchups, whatever, but like, where would you rank him on like your weekly rankings?
Don't even ask me, starter.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. Like, he's going to, and Bill Belichick was pretty effusive about like praising Stevenson after this game, saying like, I'm so glad we have this guy, like all this stuff. So
and Belichick compliments one of his own players like once a year, you know,
right?
He compliments the guys on the other teams all the time, but his own players, forget it.
13.3 targets per route run for Ramondre Stevenson too. I mean, obviously only 2 for 14, but that's pretty interesting. You know, they're not playing with their starting quarterback. Yeah, he's so good. And Jakobi Meyers, dude, Jakobi Meyers is the best good receiver that nobody cares about. I know that you always make fun of the, like, no, everybody's talking about everybody. For God's sakes, people need to talk about Jakobi Meyers more. 95.5% routes per drop back in this one. Devontae Parker, weirdly, I was looking like, did he get injured? Something like that. 40.9% routes per drop back, 0 targets in this game. Welcome to the Devontae Parker show, by the way. Like, have you missed the rest of his career? This is kind of how it goes. Meyers is just a good player. And if he's going to score touchdowns, man, like, I think he's the guy that could get into like the, I don't know, every week wide receiver 3 discussion for Jakobi Meyers, because I think he's a good, he just gets open and catches the football, man.
Yeah, good catch radius, understands spacing. I don't have the metrics you do. I would think he'd probably be really good against zone because he's such a smart receiver.
Yes, he is. Yep.
I'm going to probably regret saying this. I'm in no hurry to get Mac Jones back. I want to see more Bailey Zappe. Is that crazy?
Oh, boy. Maybe a little bit crazy, but people were definitely like, saw the signs from the stadium, like, don't worry, be Zappe. You know, the whole like, there are some folks out there.
I'll tell you what, he's got what Cooper Rush has, where the moment doesn't look big for him. He doesn't look intimidated by anything. And that's so much of the position. It's just not wetting your pants in the pocket, right? And having that poise, that pocket awareness, that presence.
Yeah.
I know, the Lions, the worst defense in the NFL. Yeah, so let's take, and he played with a lead. He played basically in a hitter's count the whole game. So, but I mean, I think he acquitted himself very well in the Green Bay game, and we do respect the Packers defense. So I don't know.
I mean, shoot, if he's going to even just level out as their long-term backup quarterback, maybe they can finally just move Brian Hoyer to the offensive coordinator role or whatever, like at this, which he's probably better suited for than backup quarterback.
Well, maybe I want to talk about Bailey Zappe, because it's just going to depress me to talk about the quarterbacks in the final game we have to talk about.
Fair enough. Let's move to it, though. 49ers 37, Carolina Panthers 15. We knew the Panthers were going to get their... We knew they were going to get taken to the woodshed. They did get taken to the woodshed here. I asked during the game, is it possible to relegate just one side of the ball for a team? Like, because I kind of want to show some respect to the Panthers defense. Like, I don't think the Panthers defense is an easy matchup for the Rams next week, right? I think that the Panthers defense is pretty good. They've got some dudes over there, and I think Phil Snow does some unique stuff from like a coverage standpoint. That offense is just, you knew they were going to get rocked by the 49ers, and they did.
Again, shout out to our buddy Schwab. We were texting after the game, and he said if Matt Rhule's still in charge of this ship next week, he might have to play PJ Walker. Not that anybody has any hopes for PJ Walker, but Baker Mayfield looks unfixable. Yeah. And at least, yeah, like there's garbage time. Walker's six pass attempts don't mean anything because the Niners just wanted to get on the bus and all that. But
well, Mayfield's in a walking boot, by the way, after the game, so they might have no choice.
They have an excuse, right? Well, but I think at this point that Rhule just has to start pressing buttons, right? He has to, we used to play softball, and our great left fielder, Kevin Adolph, when our pitcher, Larry Holt, was getting hammered, he'd yell out, "Hey, Holtie, whatever you're doing." And he'd pause. He'd go, "Do something different." And that's my thing to Ben McAdoo and Matt Rhule. Whatever you're doing, do something different. If it's PJ Walker, I'm looking forward to maybe Sam Darnold playing again. That's how much Mayfield depresses me. And I take no joy in this. Remember, I mean, you and I were both very proactive on DJ Moore, and I don't think it's DJ Moore's fault. But Baker, I don't know if just the confidence was beaten out of him, or maybe he just wasn't that good, or maybe he doesn't take it seriously enough. I don't know what the problem is. I just know that, and of course the Niners have a great defense, but Mayfield looked terrible against everybody. On the flip side, Jeff Wilson, he came out pounding early. He beat his props very early. He got a touchdown. I had that long run tackled at the one, and I like it when they reward the guy by letting him punch it in on the next play.
Yeah.
But the Niners, man, there's just never going to be a lot of volume in a lot of these games where the defense wins it. Garoppolo throws 30 passes. Nobody gets that much in the target game. Debo bails out with a touchdown, with the touchdown deodorant, but he gets no volume. This is kind of a tricky team for fantasy because they have a lot of good players, but they're going to win. What was it, 24-9 on Monday, 37-15 today, but this had like a 24-10 feel to it. They got a really cheap touchdown late because Carolina justifiably went for it late in their own territory and just kind of gave San Francisco some gift points. But I don't think, for one thing, Ayuk, I think, is really hurt by this. And I don't really trust Kittle week to week. He admits, I'm a football player. I don't really care about my stats. Other than Wilson and Debo, I think everybody else is like a half step behind where they're going to be because the defense is so great. I mean, this is easily the best defense in the NFL, and they know it.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, man. I mean, this is just the same old 49ers that we've, kind of known for the last two or three years has a limited ceiling despite how good these players are. And I mean, Jimmy too, like he definitely locks on too hard to Debo. It was very apparent in this game, 9 targets, 2 catches. Like you mentioned, that total touchdown deodorant locks on to like the check down too from the running back perspective. It's just, it's depressing. Cause like there's an alternate universe where Trey Lance was, at least going to change things up. Who knows if it would have changed things for the better or the much, much worse. We'll never really know the answer to that. But I think the 49ers, like we start the running back, guys like Kittle and guys like Ayuk have big ceilings, but they don't really have trustworthy floors. And Debo is he's a great, great player who can break every single model, but there are going to be days like this where he needs that touchdown deodorant.
I wonder who Wilson becomes for fantasy. And by the way, nobody saw Tevin Coleman coming in and carving out a significant role. But I wonder who Wilson is in fantasy when they get Elijah Mitchell back.
Great question. Probably nothing. I mean, don't you think they just...
You think they'll go right back to Mitchell? I don't know. I wonder if...
They did last year, right? Like, that's what has me kind of paused. Like, you would imagine that they wouldn't because this keeps happening with Elijah Mitchell. They, like, run him into the dirt. But I don't know. It's a little difficult when you were trying to aspire logic to Kyle Shanahan sometimes with the running back stuff. But I would suspect nothing, but I kind of hope not because I think Jeff Wilson has looked really good this year. Like looks much more like 2020 Jeff Wilson when he was healthy than 2021 Jeff Wilson when he was not.
He'll get what's blocked for sure. And he falls forward. He's an easy back to watch because you stay ahead of the down and he makes good decisions. He picks his hole and he goes to it and certainly fits the Shanahan profile of a running back. Never going to be great, but I enjoy watching Jeff Wilson play.
Me too. He's been a huge win if you just went aggressive for him on waivers in week 1. All right. That is going to do it for us. You can follow Scott on Twitter @Scott_Pianowski. You can follow me on Twitter @Matt_BYB. And while you're there, Make sure you follow the at Yahoo Fantasy account to become a better fantasy player and improve your weird little timeline out there. You will not regret it. That's my guarantee. Andy Behrens will be back tomorrow to guide us through the weekly waiver wire. I'll have to decide which regal title he will wear tomorrow. But until then, we're out.